Pierre
Great.
and done
That's
it
great.
before?
No, not that one. No, I think
Okay.
it's great. I'm
And
just
what?
so glad for Ultragenics. It's just fantastic. It really is. That's so good.
Tell us why it was great, Pierre.
Oh, just that with the warmth was really good with the body, with all the limbs. It was good and it was warm.
And it was warm.
And very, very, very quick. I mean, I react normally very quick to the command or whatever you want to call it. And I just felt it. It was great. Gotta love this stuff.
It's a very useful exercise, this one.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. What about you, Sebastian?
Well, I haven't used it before, but what I would like to outline is that I had difficulties every time we were about to close because, the body get used, you need to synchronize with both hands, So I was clenching left arm and right arm, and then I don't know, I couldn't close properly. Even I was like, flexing my right arm, but the left arm was still tense. So I think it will take more practice, till
I
my.
think as if I'm talking to you as a client and you do have this problem, then I have to say I'll leave it with you how you close. It's really the key thing is how you feel after. If you have come out of the exercise adequately, you'll feel fine. And if you haven't, it might feel
No,
a
no,
little bit
no,
woozy.
no, 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 no. Every time I had the same issue. I mean, yeah, I couldn't close properly. Either I opened my eyes too early. No, either my feet were clenched, so I need to adjust.
Well, your feet are clenched because you're closing. You're mute, Sebastian.
I couldn't synchronize, so they were not synchronized. So my right arm was relaxed and then the feet were clenched. So I had some sort of coordination problems just now to close.
Okay.
Synchronization, sorry, is the right word.
I'm hearing what you say. I'm not quite sure I understand exactly. When you are in the exercise, is the body relaxed
Yes.
in the exercise? Good. So then, when you need to close, we'll have
Yes.
to find a way for you that feels synchronized, whatever it is.
Yes.
And I was talking about doing one arm yesterday, but if
Yeah.
that's not
No, yesterday
the
worked,
best,
but now it didn't work. It
yeah,
didn't work
okay.
properly just this morning.
I'm wondering what not working actually means there. You clench your fist, you bring it here, that's fine.
Yeah, but I had at the same time I wanted to bring my left arm up
No,
without my
yes.
intention. It's like
And you
automatic is
can't.
an automatic act,
Okay, all
So
right, I
I
understand.
still have to work out, by the time my body will get used to, this
Well,
movement. Anyway, it can be dealt with. There is nothing major.
nothing major. That's absolutely fine. But it is a good idea, though, to talk it through because whatever I suggested yesterday, it's not quite right for you, is it? That's the point. And so you must find your way. And probably what you were doing before without doing the one arm is probably better for you. So go with it. You're mute again.
So just clenching, and then take a deep breath and then relax. I think
Yes.
for the time being, till my,
Big. Absolutely,
till this problem will be
absolutely.
sorted out, I
And
think it might be.
you could clench three times or four
Yeah.
times just to do it, so to work that, and your toes inside your shoes,
Yes.
and that makes sure that you come out of it.
Yes.
That's the key.
Thank you.
Pierre. Pierre.
I'm just wondering if this happens with other clients. Could we say to them to flex the feet, the ankles, like
Yes,
lift feet
you can
like
do.
that?
Yep. Yep.
Okay.
It's
Okay.
almost up to them to find it. I don't know, Donna and Patricia, if you've had clients with these kind of issues, because it can happen with chronic pain and all sorts of things. What would you
Yeah.
say?
I've had lots of people with fibromyalgia and chronic pain that can't do, the shoulders at all. It hurts. So it's just, I talk to them about just finding their own way of putting their tension back in. That's what it's about, isn't it? Is putting tension back in. So it doesn't really matter how you do that, just making sure that it that your body's working again. And yeah, that can be like just clenching the fists lots of times, or even some can do this. It's just more that they can't do. But yeah,
But then
feet as
even
well.
that's not necessary. I mean, the clothes actually is okay, you might have a bigger stretch, and that's the bit that we can't do, fair enough. But all the other bits can go to it. And then of course, but not with your shoulders, Sebastian. Yeah, it is finding their own way. Patricia, do you have anything to add?
I haven't come across it with clients, but I think if I did, I'd probably suggest trying the feet because that's something I
Well, it
use
is. We
myself.
well.
I wouldn't tell them it was because I use it, but I find that very useful for me if I'm on a train or
Yeah.
something doing it and I don't want to do a full stretch.
Well, this is the point. On the client sheets somewhere, it should say what the alternative close is. I hope you've got that. So there is an instruction there to say, by all means, clench your toes just as you clench your fists, and then you're doing the same job, same kind of job. So I hope it's on your sheets, because if it isn't, I must give you some new sheets.
It is, Jane.
It is, it
Yeah,
is.
it is.
Bev, thank you. Okay, right. So, because everybody's on a train or in public or doing something somewhere, and yes, I know we've spoken about that before. Well, look, this is useful, isn't it, for our client work? Okay. Bev, how did you get on with that other exercise? Have you done that before?
I can't remember if I have done it. I don't think I've got a copy in my notes, so I'm not sure if I went into heaviness part one straight away. Yeah, interesting. Definitely a good one for practicing the clothes, and thinking of teaching it. Yeah.
But don't do it in week one. Why not?
Yeah.
Don't do it in week one with your clients. Why not?
Do what in week one? Sorry, Jane.
This exercise we've just done, you
Yes.
just mentioned maybe you didn't do it with heaviness, Bev. So I'm just asking you. You would never teach this one to a client in week one. Why not?
Isn't it the priming exercise that goes with when you're introducing the training environment and the posture?
Yes,
Isn't that what you said today?
priming is short stitch. We've just done an alternative short stitch. And I think Pia's got the answer.
All right, so I missed the beginning of it because I wasn't here. So I thought you were doing short stitch. Sorry.
Got it. And I apologize too. Yes, suddenly you reappeared, didn't you? Yes. We did not do good old short stitch. We did right arm heavy. And Pia's got the answer to that last question, though.
There's warmth in
There's warmth in it. We
it.
can't do that in week one because it's got warmth in it. Sorry, Bev. Yes, we were on different paths, weren't we? I do apologize. Okay. So what we've just done is the alternative short stitch, which is on your session five sheet. I think, yes, because when we move on to cardiac, then we've got the phrase, my arms and legs are heavy and warm in place in our standard AT. So this is just an adaptation to make it a little short exercise where we haven't got much time. And you're quite right, Bev, our short stitch stroke priming exercise is simply right arm heavy at the very beginning. Of course you are. That is quite right. Yes. Is that all right? Is that okay for you? Sorry, I did not do my job of observation properly then, to see what was going on. Okay. We must have some feedback on your last week's practice doing the solar plexus. You're getting the feel now for what we're doing. We would go round the clients. And Donna, do you want to be a little bit in role? We mustn't take too long on this. It's always me that talks a lot, sorry.
Yes, last week was interesting. I had lots of butterflies and just sensations, I think. Maybe because I'm a bit out of touch with that area. But it almost felt like it was reminding me it was still there, maybe just by
Yes,
feeling something when I put
something.
my attention to it.
So that was specifically while you were using solar plexus warm? Yeah. Yes,
because when I Isn't moved it? Away, it went away. You know, when I moved my attention away from
yes.
it.
Yes.
Yes. Feeling stopped.
Okay. Well, that wasn't a problem at all?
Oh, no, it was quite nice, actually, just, knowing that, because I think I ignore it a bit, so for obvious reasons. But, yeah, it was quite nice to know that it is still there and working and feeling okay.
I think
that was the difference, that it felt okay.
Butterflies in the tummy, of course, is a very much a sort of a neurological reaction to that particular area and its nerve supplies where we get our anxiety. Well, butterflies in the tummy is anxiety, is it? But also there's another sort of butterflies in the tummy when we're feeling excited. And so we've got anticipation perhaps being two sides of the same coin. Anticipation has got anxiety at one side, afraid perhaps of something in the future. And then on the other side, we've got excitement of something in the future. Oh, I'm going to a party. I'm going to meet my old friends. Oh, I can't wait for Saturday. And we can have butterfly feelings for both of those. Interesting. Right. Anyway, that's a bit of... So, Pia, what about you in your practice in with the solar plexus, if you can think of anything to say?
Okay, yeah. So as a pretend client, I don't think I'm doing it right because I felt nothing.
Okay.
I said the words, but I could feel nothing. So I just wonder if I did it right.
It's very difficult to do it wrong. So I think that's the first thing to say. It is the words. And if the body isn't reacting, so be it. It's quiet. Okay. It's not reacting. That's so absolutely fine.
Okay.
Nobody's doing anything.
I was doing it wrong. Okay.
No, no. You probably knew that you were aiming for some place in the upper abdomen. Okay. Yeah. So if there's nothing, there's nothing. And if there's something, there's something. That's all we do with autogenics, actually. Okay.
That's
well
good.
Done. Keep it in, though, because your body knows what it's doing, even if your brain doesn't.
Right. Okay. Thank
you. So how about you, Bev, in your practice of solar plexus?
Yeah, it felt like it was the missing piece. That, you know, I felt the same when... before the neck and shoulders came in, it was like I wanted to be able to bring my awareness to that part of my body. Mm-hmm. So it felt, I've been doing the exercises, but kind of the middle bit of me is missing in my awareness. So I really enjoyed bringing this exercise in.
Okay, how nice, how lovely. So you're not talking particularly about any warmth?
No, I think just kind of the inclusion of that part of my body. Up to now, it's felt like there's something missing.
Yes. So that's the missing bit. Jigsaw. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Lovely. And Sebastian?
I would say that it was a bit weird because, again, I was trying when I reached the formula, my solar plexus is warm. I was trying physically to locate the solar plexus, and all of a sudden I felt my heart beating fast, perhaps considering that I'm not doing right.
Yeah.
It's just a personal experience.
Yes, your personal experience. I think from what I'm hearing, I mean, what are we saying? You had a bit of a reaction, a little anxiety reaction. Would that be right?
Yes.
Your heart
yes.
beating a little bit faster. I can't find my solar plexus. Help, where is it? Is that the sort of idea that was going on?
Yes.
Okay, so we just observe, and you'll have written it in your diary. Okay. Was that for the whole week, Sebastian, or was it just
I think for the first 2 days till I get used to the formula. But every time when, like, there is something new, perhaps it's just the way I'm built, you know, I'm a bit anxious whether I'm doing things right. So, you know, by the time it'll become an automatism, then, that feeling is just vanished. But for the first time, I do have, it's not only with the solar plexus, with the other formulas, I have the same issue.
Yes. So you are aware of that, aren't you? You're observing it as it comes and realizing, oh, it's new. Okay. and then it gradually settles down again.
And okay. this is quite real, I would say.
Yes.
Even I haven't practiced a week, but
yes,
it's some issues is that I normally come across.
And we don't even need to call it an issue. It's just what happened for you in that exercise on that day at that time. We're always working in the present moment, always. So, and you know that about yourself. So I'm going to suggest, is this right, that there's less concern when that happens now because you understand it. Would that be right? Yeah. Okay, good. Lovely. So I hope I've done some reassurance there and some encouragement. Okay. Yeah. Because that's what we have to do with our clients. Thank you, Sebastian. That's brilliant. Okay. Patricia, would you have anything to add? Or not to add? What am I saying? How was that exercise, your last week's practice?
Okay, well, I don't usually feel any warmth at all at my solar plexus, but I sometimes, when I get to that part of the exercise, I might feel some slight tension there, area. But by the time I get round to the second run of it, it's gone. And I just observe it. Accept it. That's the way it is.
Yeah. Okay. So as a client, you would be reporting that as your first experience of that. Of course, you're Patricia and you're talking about your general practice. Yeah. Okay, so we'll realise that. Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay. Has anybody been doing... Oh, have you got a question, Bev? Or is it you're just your hand sitting there? That's all right. That's fine. No, don't worry. Has anybody been doing any offloading? Clients? Donna?
Yes, I had to go at the anger offloading, which was quite interesting because I ended up crying.
Right. Okay.
Which I think I needed. Obviously, I needed because it happened. But it was the way it morphed into crying. I didn't start off feeling that I needed to cry or anything.
Yeah.
But it just happened.
Yeah.
Is that okay?
All of it is okay. Because the way you're telling it, you just followed your own instincts through with it and realised, you said, I must have needed it because otherwise it wouldn't have happened, the crying. Yes. Mm. And it is, it's a lovely illustration of how our emotions are all mixed up with each other anyway. So although we've got a specific exercise for anger, of course it can move. Of course it can move into crying. Don't you cry, or don't some of us cry for injustice, and which is anger and stuff? I can be quite tearful at times for that. So yes, of course. I hope, the only question I've got for you with that, Donna, is whether you actually finished the crying. You went along with it until it stopped.
I thought I did, but then I had a headache. So is that something that might tell me that I haven't, because that was unusual?
Well, when you remember when we discussed the crying exercise, we had that list of crying need symptoms, and a frontal headache here is one of the most common ones for that. So what you've just said probably does indicate, actually, I think I need to do a bit more crying, because that's what happened for you. It sometimes happens, 10, 15 minutes after you've stopped crying, thinking you're all right.
Yeah.
And then it pops
up. That's
what
happened.
Yeah.
Well, and then I wasn't sure whether I needed to start with the anger one again, or is it now a crying one? Because,
do you know, I don't think it matters at all. I mean, we can say it's a frontal headache, so yes, we would do a crying exercise because that's our association with it. But hey, if the anger is still there and bubbling up somewhere from your solar plexus, then why not go back to the anger one? It actually wouldn't matter at all, one jot, how you went from one offloading to another. It doesn't matter at all. So that's great. So overall, I'm hoping that the issue about the anger has maybe given you a few more insights, maybe, on what it's about.
Yes, I'm not as cross, actually, as I was. And I have realised that I was quite upset about it.
Yes. And then to do the crying... Sorry.
No, I was just saying that I hadn't realised until I started crying. I didn't realise it had upset me.
Yes. Isn't that interesting? So that anger exercise led you into having, let's use our good language, having a good cry, a real cry. And that's how that offloading exercise ended up. Brilliant. Wonderful work there. Thank you. Well done. You've got something, Pia.
Yeah, I actually did, and this is real life. This is not pretend. I did the anxiety. I'm dyslexic, so I really hate tests from I was a tiny, tiny kid, right? And I hate them. I've done so much work on them over the years, and it's just my inner child is just terrified of tests because of really bad experiences. And so what I did yesterday was I'm anxious. I bloody don't want to do it. I don't want to do it. And I just said it all, and now I'm quite okay. So it actually, real life, it helped.
It has helped.
Right.
Absolutely delighted to hear that, and thank you. And it also set in my head that we must make sure that we make allowances, of course, for that situation. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to pick you up a little bit technically on it, because mm-hmm. I hate tests is more of an anger exercise than an anxiety one. That's easily done, isn't it? Because there's no word that is associated with anxiety there. It's I'm afraid of. It's the anxiety exercise.
Okay.
However, what you did, everything is there. Everything worked. You did an anger exercise, thinking you were doing an You did an anger exercise, or started off by being anger. I hate tests. I don't want to do it. I'm done. That's all anger.
So it's actually two. So I did two. Okay. Oh, this is good.
Yes. Okay. It was funny how the brain will do its own work. Clearly, you were feeling more anger than anxiety. So that's what you did without even realizing. I love it. I think that's great. But okay. For the technical purposes of our training here today, I needed to point that out to you.
No, it's so great.
So that you can help your clients when they do the same thing. You said you were doing an anxiety exercise, but isn't it funny how it came out angry? And that realization.
That's where I started. And then it went into, the fear of it.
Yes. And that's when you need the words, I'm afraid of, because I'm afraid of is actually addressing the anxious feelings. So we do need to put that in if we are doing an anxiety exercise. But that's two of you who have illustrated our old maxim that all roads lead to Rome. Wherever you start with your offloading exercises, you could even have got to the same place having started with a shakeout. You could have started kicking the exercises or kicking me because I'm the one who's making you do this test. Doesn't matter where it goes, all of it is what you need. Sebastian, you're mute.
Sorry, just one quick question. So when we're practicing the exercises of anxiety, do we need to mime the anxiety also?
Mime it?
Sorry. To express anxiety.
Yes.
Physically. Do we have to, or just verbally?
Oh, it is verbal. I don't know how we could do it physically. I don't think we could really. But unless, of course, you feel that you want to stand up and shake out.
Sometimes when you're very anxious, you tend to shake.
You can do whatever you like is what it comes to, but I wouldn't say it's actually miming or making the body do the anxiety work. I think it really is the verbally, but it doesn't matter. You can do whatever you like with the offloading. You can imagine you're the child age four having a tantrum and the child won't think about whether they're doing anxiety or whatever they're doing. They're just having a tantrum for whatever reason that they need it. So, okay. Any other comments about offloading? We must move on otherwise. Okay. Two wonderful examples there. Thank you. Okay. Now, so in our group session, we are now moving on to week 8. And if you have got that ready, you've got the sheet with the exercise on it. I don't know if it actually says week 8 on your sheets. It might not do. but it's
no, it doesn't say we, Kate.
No, okay. But you know where, you know roughly where it is in your yellow sheets.
Pencil.
Now this, I'm this talking to you as clients. This is your full autogenic exercise. All six autogenic exercises of Schultz are in there. We've learned them all now at today's level. We've started with trigger phrase. We go to heavy and warm in the one phrase. That's always nice to do that way. The heartbeat formula and the breathing. So we've got heaviness is one, warmth is exercise two, the cardiac is exercise three, the breathing is exercise four. Last week we did the solar plexus, which is exercise five. And here we are today with exercise six. And we're going to the forehead. And I rather like this one. It's a bit, you were talking, Bev, about finding a missing piece. I think I feel that one on the forehead quite often. It's quite a light-hearted one in a way. It's a very gentle phrase. My forehead is cool. And Schultz's patients were telling him, some of them were, that they felt a little bit of coolness while they were doing their other autogenic exercises. So he put this one in. And of course, we've got common language around cool, haven't we? We've got something like, oh, they're so hot and bothered. That's somebody who's really quite ratty, quite abrasive, twitchy, over-concerned. I don't know, somebody who's quite awkward to work with, we could describe as hot and bothered. But what's the opposite to that? Oh, cool, calm and collected. Oh, they're cool-headed. We could feel cool, chill out, man, we say. There's a lot of language around cool. There really is. So this exercise is very potent. Well, I won't say potent, I will say apt for us. So after my solar plexus is warm, we're going to bring our awareness up to the forehead. Everyone knows where that is. You haven't got to struggle and rummage around in your tummy finding anything anymore. You've got to go straight up here. You know where that is. And we use the phrase, my forehead is cool. And if you wish, you can make that cool and clear. I think that's on your sheets. Or cool and light. That's up to you.
Mm.
If you were going to do that, which one would you choose, do you think? And you don't have to have either of them.
I would opt for cool and clear because light, I don't know.
Yep. Okay. Any other comment about that?
Yeah. If I use light, it implies to me lightheadedness, dizziness.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm.
I think we might all be in agreement about that. That's exactly my thoughts too. I much prefer the idea of being clear-headed than light-headed. However, Donna and Patricia might have another view.
Well, I think clear because I use it often if I'm muddled. If I used it more when I was working in an office, when people are coming at you and that kind of thing, like, and they go, and you go, where was I?
Yeah, yeah.
Just say cool and clear. Clear my head.
Yeah. Lovely.
Yeah.
Donna?
Yeah, same as Patricia, different reasons though. Brain fog and pain, you can get a bit. So I like the everyone go away.
Yeah. Cool clear, clear. Yes.
Even in the supermarket, I find it helpful. You know, when you go for something, they haven't got that, and you think, oh, what am I going to do? I'm in a rush, need dinner.
Yeah.
Just stop. Cool and clear.
Yeah.
For me.
Yes. Thank you, Donna. And you've moved us on to the next bit of or what we haven't quite said it yet. It's all right. Sorry, I'll say it now. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. But since you brought it in, and so has Patricia working in the office, you can use forehead cool as a partial exercise. So is anybody still using neck and shoulders heavy as a partial exercise? Yes. Okay. And cool and clear, if you wish, is also very nice to do when you're in an awkward, tense situation, supermarket or doing a test or other sorts of things. Cool and clear can be quite good quite nice to use. It doesn't suddenly make all the lights come on and give you all the answers. Oh, yes. But it just helps you stand back a bit with needing that clarity. And, oh, yes, I know what I came in for. It was cucumbers. Instead of having a, oh, God, where am I going? What am I doing? Yeah. So that is a partial exercise as well. But also, there is a link, and I'm not sure if we put this on the, I should have done my homework before we started, in your sheets. But the old-fashioned ways, and I'm talking really old-fashioned ways, of treating patients, psychiatric patients who might be in a psychotic state, and this is before any medications were available or anything else, they would put the patient into a warm bath and they would put a cool flannel on the forehead. My hands are very cold. I've been outside with other people just now, and it's actually really nice to put my hand on my forehead like that. And we do that, don't we? It's part of our gesture, something. Oh, no, I forgot, or something like this. So a cool flannel on the forehead with the patient in a warm bath, they calmed down. So obviously that setup acted on the autonomic nervous system so that it brought down the distress for these patients. And what have we got? We've got an autogenic warm bath. And now we're putting a cool forehead in there. So what I often say to people, if you want to blow across the back of your hand and see what a little breeze might feel like, do you want to do that now as my clients? Okay. It's quite gentle. Right? And now we're not saying you must now transfer this to up here. We can't do that. Of course we can't. But it just might help an awareness of what might be going on across here. And very often there's very little, just like in some of your other exercises, nothing to report. These are just words that are keep us in our altered state. Here, you've got a query.
It probably isn't. So it's not okay to say, like, it's like a breeze that goes across your face, because we all know that feeling.
We know what that feeling is. Yes, you could say that. You can say that. But of course, on the other hand, we still want to stay neutral. So it's a little bit of raising awareness without expecting anything. That's really what it is. Bev?
Yeah, interesting. I was just reading a little bit in one of the books that I was given, and it brought up that image of the sun that you talked about yesterday, Pia. And I don't know if it's true that in previous kind of formulations of autogenic therapy or training, they used to have an image.
Yes.
Yeah.
They did. And that was discounted. I don't know who stopped it, whether it was Schultz or Luther or maybe the discussions between them. But of course, when it becomes clear that imagery is coming out of autogenics, that was when they realized they were on the wrong track. And there was a lot of time. I mean, we're talking about 70s when Luther was developing his offloading exercises. And during that time, he and Schultz were collaborating, 60s and 70s, collaborating on the books they wrote together. Luther especially was realizing that imagery comes up spontaneously through doing autogenics. So many other techniques around that time were all about creating imagery. Take yourself to the place where you feel you're most relaxed. Take yourself to the sunshine and the beach and so on. And then Luther, in describing why that was not a good idea to us, he would say, well, you could be in your favourite field with the stream bubbling beside you and the sun shining, but you don't realise there's a bull in the field and it's going to come and get you if you don't get out of it quick, because the brain might well choose any old random time to bring up some feeling or emotion. And maybe there was a bull in a field once upon a time when you were a kid, maybe. So he would say, we know nothing about the patients. We mustn't put anything in there for them. We mustn't tell them what to do, because autogenics is going to do what it needs. And that's important.
Thanks. So, Thank you for that, Jane. That's really interesting.
And so imagining the sun in here for somebody, I don't know, let's make something up. for someone who has suffered from very serious sunburn at some point in their lives, that would be the last thing to tell them to do. But we don't know that, so we tell them nothing, and then they experience it. Yeah. Yes, Sebastian.
So I would like to know, you know, for example, during summer months when it's really, really hot and stuffy in the room, we don't have air con, you know, like other people like here, you know, got in Australia. How do we deal with this? Like, you know, with the, how we call it, forehead formula, you know, when it's very stuffy and warm in the room and, you know, you're very sweaty. Can we still use the formula?
Of course you can still use it. Because you never know, it just might help to cool you down. Even if it doesn't do that literally and actually, it might give you a sense that actually, oh, it's not so hot in here, I can still do my AT. So it's not that you can't use something. Okay, if then when you do use it, it feels uncomfortable, then you might decide, oh, do you know what, it's just too hot, this is ridiculous, I'll leave that one out. But you can still do the rest of the exercises. But the same question can also occur with warmth. Is that what you're going to ask, Pia?
Oh, I live in a very, very hot country, and I use this all the time. And, you know, I can sit in a room where people, they, oh, so hot, and I just sit there with my little formula, and I'm okay. So it's really good, even in stuffy. It helps me tremendously. I just want to say that.
No, thank you. So I should have come straight to you after Sebastian's question, shouldn't I? Because here you are in her hot country. You've got all the answers. But are you saying that about specifically the forehead cool formula? You're sitting there doing it as a partial exercise.
It just goes through. It's like my body knows how to regulate itself.
Yes.
Yes.
That's really interesting. And of course, the other side of that, we could look at the warmth. And say, in those circumstances, Sebastian, you wouldn't want to put warmth in because it just may, you know, it would just be adding to the heat that's already there. No. The body knows where it is. It knows how to adjust itself. And funnily enough, the warmth exercise can actually, I won't say help you to cool down. I wouldn't say it like that. But actually, the sense that you get is actually, this is all right. This is okay.
One last question. And are there any contraindications for this formula or not?
For this formula, yes. I think we always used to say if people suffered headaches, I don't regard that there are any contraindications to this formula, because if you're going to get headaches, you're going to get them anyway, whether you're using these words or not. I've never known anyone have any kind of reaction to it. More likely it's a reaction that's going on in autogenic training anyway, with maybe some emotional things going on or whatever it might be. And if it happens to link up with when you're using the formula, it doesn't really mean that the formula is bad. It just means a coincidence. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Donna and Patricia, is that sort of what you would?
Yes. Hmm. Yes. Hmm.
Okay, let's do an exercise. We will just do the one, as usual, in our training session. So we're going to sit back. Okay, I would, in reality, always say, I do hope you're mixing up the postures and doing different ones different times. Settling comfortably, as usual, being aware of our surroundings and any sounds we can let be. And then to check that we're comfortable, and that's all we need to worry about. We just need to be comfortable. If we are comfortable, there's no tension there. So we start with the toes and feet, and we take that mental walk up through the body all the way up to the top of the head. If something isn't quite comfortable, you can adjust. Otherwise, we come down across the face, forehead, eyes, mouth, jaw. And now we take the awareness to the dominant arm. My right arm is heavy. My arms and legs are heavy and warm. My arms and legs are heavy and warm. My arms and legs are heavy and warm. My heartbeat is calm and regular. My heartbeat is calm and regular. My heartbeat is calm and regular. And now we follow the breathing. It breathes me. It breathes me. It breathes me. And now moving on, my solar plexus is warm. My solar plexus is warm. My solar plexus is warm. And now we'll take our awareness to the forehead. My forehead is cool. My forehead is cool. My forehead is cool. My neck and shoulders are heavy. My neck and shoulders are heavy. My neck and shoulders are heavy. I am at peace. I am at peace. I am at peace. And now we're going to close in the way that you can manage. Okay. So at the end of closing, we open our eyes. So that's presumably what you were doing there, Sebastian. Very good. Right. Oh, Sebastian, how did you get on with our new phrase?
Being honest with you, I noticed something else. I'm not sure whether it's just particular to me, but when you reach to the cool head, sorry, the forehead cool, I think my brain trying to translate the expression, the formula into Romanian, and the same when you said the solar plexus is warm. So without my intention, I don't know why. And I felt this time, I mean, these real hands, very heavy, hands cold, and I didn't feel any sensation, you know, like cool forehead. I mean, actually my forehead is quite warm.
Yes,
but yes. The legs and arms very heavy, especially the arms, both arms.
Well, you can see my grin here. I'm astounded. I love this work because it's so full of surprises.
And Sebastian, sorry to interrupt. And the other thing that I noticed while practicing, it's like my mouth, it's slightly open. I mean, I didn't even realize, perhaps it's just because I'm relaxed, but I did enjoy it.
My mouth now is tense. And when we're doing an autogenic exercise, okay, so anything can happen in between those two points. Lovely observation. Honestly, Sebastian, given your situation of not having learned autogenics previously, I think all of these things are wonderful. What I love best, I'm being quite, what's the word? I'm being over-enthusiastic here. I'm not being neutral here. What I loved best was how you spontaneously wanted to translate those phrases into Romanian.
But the fact, you know, because normally we've been doing this, you know, I try to keep my inner voice, you know, sharp. I mean, you know, but this time without my intention, you know, like I was trying, definitely I translated, being honest with you, and I was trying to look for the right, you know, translation. I think it might be normal. I don't know.
Well, look, listen. Okay, everything is normal. And you said at the beginning, it might be particular to me. Yes, of course it is. All our reactions are particular to our own selves, all of them. And so that's what you found yourself doing. Nothing wrong with it. In fact, I'm going to say everything is right with it. Your brain actually wants you to do this in Romanian. It's your mother tongue.
I'm just curious whether Pia came across the same experience, not now, you know, while exercising.
You know, it changed for me when I started to dream in English. That was when it changed. And it took me, I lived here for about 2 years because, of course, I did it in Danish. And 2 years, there was such a switch where, oh, my God, goodness, I'm dreaming in English. So there was a big shift for me. So I never do AT in my mother tongue. Never.
Mother tongue.
But I've been here 36 years too.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
A long time.
This is the same problem in reverse, isn't it? It's very interesting. And we often do say when people are doing it in their mother tongue, or they lived here for a long, long time. And just as you've said, dreaming in English is a real key to that being perhaps the most natural way for you now. Maybe not for Sebastian. We don't know. I don't know if you're dreaming in English or Romanian or in something else.
Well, the trouble is that I'm using everyday Romanian and English also. So when I speak with family, yeah, I speak in Romanian. So, you know, but, you know, perhaps as Pia, paraphrasing Pia, you know, when you use English every day, you know, every day of your life, and perhaps she doesn't speak very often, yes, you tend to adopt, you know.
Yes. But
the new environment.
I'm going to put a but in there. Your experience in that exercise was your brain needing at that moment, because you found yourself doing it.
Yes.
So it's brain directed. We must remember the autogenic training is brain directed. It wants you to do Romanian. Donna, what would be your...
Probably.
I would say the same as you, Jane. There's something, obviously, that's taking you back there.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether I would put it to you to try it all in Romanian just to see how it feels. I might.
Yes.
Yeah. If you're my client, obviously we'd talk more about it. But I think that might be something I would discuss with you, is just trying it. Mm. I've come across this similar but completely different with right-handed and left-handed. People have switched their hands when they've gone, you know, focus on your right arm. They come back and say, I keep thinking about my left arm. It's my left arm all the time. Mm. And when I've uncovered this, it's happened two, maybe three times. They were left-handed, but brought up very stringently right-handed because it was not right to be left-handed. So they thought they were right-handed, but actually they are left-handed. And once when we changed the formula, I said, well, try it, just start with your left hand. And then things start happening and start moving. So I think I'd do the same thing with you, with the language, to try it and see.
Yeah.
But it's fascinating.
Yes. That's all it is. It is trying it and see.
Yeah.
And we did talk about it earlier, Sebastian, and that wasn't something you wanted to do. You live in England and all of that, and your English is superb. And so, you know, that's the way of it for you then. How interesting that we've come to this point now where you were not in control of that, were you? it was going on in your head. I think this is why I love the work. It's so full of surprises, and you can trust that it has all come from you. What a lovely analogy, Donna. I'd forgotten the left-handed bit. Yes, that's another. I've had several of those situations. I even had one person very dramatically using autogenic training, right arm heavy as the trigger phrase, going through the thing in about week two, very early on, a sense that his left hand was put round the back. That was the body memory coming up in his autogenic training. The left hand was put around the back. It was quite distressing. And somebody else had a similar thing, that they felt completely dizzy using right arm heavy. It just, they knew it wasn't right, and so on. So again, switching over, and they do all their exercises starting with left arm heavy instead, everything in reverse, and they settle beautifully doing their autogenics. So these are the things that we work with, which are so fascinating. They come to light, Sebastian.
Sorry, I have an interesting question that I have, working in hospital, I came across different kind of, people. So I know that there was a gentleman, he was dextrocardic, so that means he was born, his heart was on the right side. So in that case, if someone, let's say, has got the heart on the right side of the chest,
yes,
do we need to make any adjustment when we do like the heartbeat formula or not?
Why would we?
I'm asking.
Well, I'm asking you. Let's just work it out.
I don't think so. Exactly. It's just the lateralization. We need to know, what is their domination, right? Whether they are right hand or left hand. I think this is really important.
It's the domination, the dominant arm and the right side of the body is one thing, but we only have one heart. If the man has a heart, he's going to use the phrase just as we always use it. Okay, he does have a heart. So I think that's the answer to that situation. Of course, when you're doing the assessment and you discover this person has got the heart in that situation, then, of course, you're going to have a different dialogue at the assessment. Oh, so this sounds quite difficult for you, and he's had surgeries, and he's had, what are the stories behind it, if he wants to tell any. That's a different situation, but it doesn't affect whether we teach the heartbeat formula. It really doesn't. Some people would say, oh, perhaps you'd leave it out. No. He's got a heart. We're going to do it. Yes.
Thank you.
Yes, Bev.
Yeah, just on that note then, one of the things in the theory document or somewhere in the binder, it talks about, with the heartbeat formula, some people don't sense necessarily a heartbeat. So then we maybe say, bring your awareness to where you might feel a pulse, or just bring your awareness to your chest, left of center. In this case, maybe I would omit that.
You're right. Do you know what? Less is more. So yes, we have written those things, but actually I rarely use them. I think we did with this. I usually say perhaps take your awareness to a chest area. I think it's a difficult balance, that one. But you're quite right, Bev. You certainly would not say left of center. And actually, I never say that. I don't know about you, Patricia and Donna. No. So we don't have to be that specific. And there are some therapists who say, put your hand here and feel your heartbeat. Well, no, I wouldn't do that. But it's just a sense while we are in there. So it's a balance between knowing what we're doing and making some kind of mental contact with the idea. Maybe it's that. Rather than we've got to find that ba-dum, ba-dum, ba-dum pulse. No, we don't have to. For some people, it's there all the time anyway, and they wish it would go away. So, we can only introduce it to them, lead them through an exercise and see how it was.
So are you saying that when we come to my heartbeat is calm and regular, when we come to that formula and we introduce it, that we don't, how do we introduce it then just for that week? So when we then go on to subsequent weeks, we're not making a big thing out of it. We're just saying the formula and not paying any special attention. So would you just say bring your awareness to the sensation of your heartbeat, wherever you might feel that in your body, or to your chest area? Is that how you'd say it then?
Well, there are two things. There's one is explaining the exercise. So, of course, it starts with actually warmth brings us on to the circulation. Sorry, warmth is all about the circulation. So actually, we're talking about the heart of the circulation. That's quite a nice way to introduce the idea when we're explaining it. And then, so during the explanation, not everyone is aware of a heartbeat or a pulse. Doesn't matter. And when you're in the exercise, you would say, you might be aware. I use the word might and maybe quite a lot. So you may be aware of a pulse somewhere in the body. That's fine. Or simply go to the chest. That's fine. So even as you're in the exercise, which I hope I did when we did it, but of course it was last weekend, it's something quite casual. But you are right, Bev, to pinpoint that, of course, once we have moved on, you don't pay that sort of attention. And of course, we don't really need to pay that sort of attention here. But it is a new phrase. Some people can get a bit anxious about it. They don't quite know what's going on in their heart. They may know somebody who died of a heart attack. There are all sorts of associations that can go with it. So we do have to pay attention to all sides. Now I'm talking far too much. I think once you're working with a client, you will find there is no problem. Because if they don't like it, they will have told you before you do the exercise. They are quite like to say, I don't like to think of my heart. I really don't want to go there. Somebody did this or whatever. I don't like it. And of course, it's quite different to anything we've done before. We've had all our awareness on the external part of the body, the limbs. So when we get to the heartbeat, actually, that's when I usually say, this is where autogenics goes in a completely different direction to a lot of other methods. We're going inside now. I don't know any other kind of methods of this nature where we're paying attention to the heart. But that's what we're going to be doing now. And sometimes you can see people with a body language cringing. It's rare, but when it happens, we can be aware of it. Still go on with your explanation. And then somebody might get to a point, I don't want to do this exercise. I really, really don't. Now, if they're individual, it's fine. You can say, right, what I'm going to do, we are going to do it. And I'm going to take you just into one statement of it, and we'll move swiftly on to neck and shoulders heavy. And that's quite a good way to introduce people to it. If they really, really can't, and they're in a very high state of agitation, they won't even let you get to the words. They will say, I can't do this. I really, really can't. Okay, so you need to have a bit of a shakedown, come out of it, of course, do the close and have a shakedown and have a dialogue about it. And then give them the instruction that they can do the whole of the rest of the exercise without using the heartbeat at all. And that's fine. And very often, then they come back the next time and it's in there. It's come in, just like Sebastian's Romanian came in. They find themselves, actually, it's all right. It's my heart. It's fine. And they're not feeling anything. They're not trying to feel anything. It's just the words. They caught themselves into that place where they can accept it. I can't remember anyone who could never use the heartbeat formula. Look, there's me going on again. I'm so good at a long answer for a short question.
It's very helpful, though, Jane, when you explain things. It's really helpful, even if it's, I like it. Might not be time-wise, but I like it.
Okay. Well, all right. Well, thank you for that. But also, I worry that it's almost like too much information. Oh, how am I going to remember all of this? And, of course, you don't have to. When you need it at some time, it'll pop up when you're talking to someone. Oh, yeah, well, we could do it this way or that way. You'll find your own ways to work around it. So you don't have to remember every word. Is it coffee time?
It's 10:38.
Oh, personal meditation. Ah, right. No, it isn't coffee time. I thought we were doing coffee next. Right. Can we go into our coffee break a little bit? And we'll do personal and motivational formulae a little bit. No, Bev, is that not a good idea?
I'm a stickler for sticking to break time, but yes. I'm happy to go into it. But yeah, we always seem to eat into our breaks.
Yes, well, this is why I apologise for talking too much. You are quite right. We mustn't not have our break. I was just wondering if we had coffee now and come back. No, let's do what's on the timetable. I quite understand that. And 20 minutes is fine for personal and motivational formulae, especially if you've read the notes on it. So let's do it. We're going to finish at 11 and have coffee.
I don't need half an hour for coffee, though.
Well, that's what I was saying. If we went into 10 minutes of the coffee break, because it is a long coffee break.
Yeah, that's a really long one.
Yes, so we can do it. We'll be all right. Is that all right for everybody? Okay. What is a personal and motivational formula? A personal and motivational formula is when we talk to our clients, when they have learned all the standard formulae. What would you like to do for yourself? A private kind of statement that you can make up for yourself. Now, Sebastian won't have actually done any of this, but Pia and Bev, I'm assuming at least you've met the idea of this before. Have you used them? I'll just say one more thing. These are not compulsory. A lot of people find it worrying to think that they've got to do all this. So they don't have to. They can carry on with their standard autogenics. But we introduced the idea of this in our final session, which we would do this afternoon. It's another time we can catch it. But Pia, did you sort of grab onto these at all, or did they pass you by?
For me, it's essential for me. And I'll tell you, I can give you an example, because when we had the floods here, we were isolated. We had no power, no telephone, no nothing. Landslides around us. So we were just here. So we felt, and the water was rising. People were sitting on the rooftops. Yeah. So we had nowhere to go. And we felt so vulnerable, because normally you could feel safe. You have your feet on the ground. Mm-hmm. But we were in a position where we might not have our feet on the ground, and for days and days and days. So I am safe. I am safe. I am safe. And I dealt with the crisis very different to everyone else around me. And I know it was AT. I absolutely know it. I know. Yeah. Yes. So very helpful. I love them.
Yes. I am safe. Thank you. I'm going to come back to that. We'll hear from Bev. If thank you so much. I mean, that's a really, goodness me. I mean, it's a very dramatic and horrific situation. My goodness. And three words helped you. Three words linked with autogenics. Of course, we cannot say that it was separate. Yes. Bev. Did you cotton onto these at all, or were interested in them?
Yeah, definitely. at first I thought, is this just magical thinking? You know, wishful magical thinking. But then I realised there's something really powerful about the motivational formula or the affirmation in the autogenic state. Like, did they say it's similar to the post-hypnotic suggestive state, something just that it goes somewhere deep, you know, to bring about change. So I've used it to really help behavioural changes with great success. Yeah. So I think where I struggle with it is getting the right formula, the one that kind of makes me smile, the one that makes me think, yeah, that's it. And I might think I've got it, and then as I'm introducing it and doing it, my brain comes in and argues why it's not the right one. So my brain is sabotaging my choices sometimes, so any help that you can give with that would be much appreciated.
Let's save that for a moment, because I think what we'll do is go through how you would teach these to clients. But actually, then we'll use you as a client to just see what happens with that. Yeah. Thank you very much. Both very different experiences about the same thing. And yes, you've got it right, Bev. We are looking at putting something into our exercise while we are in the autogenic state. So we are in an altered state, and we are allowing the brain and body and mind to do its own work. And we put something in. And what was so impressive about yours, Pia, three words, I am safe, when the reality is you did not feel safe at all. And so the fact that your mind and body accepted those words would be accompanied by the fact that it's used to doing autogenics and what you're giving it is okay. And so whatever it was doing, we have no idea technically what it was doing, but it brought about a sense in you of being safe. Wonderful. However, it could have happened the exact opposite. The knowledge in the brain is, well, I'm not safe. That's what I can't do this. So it might have been for you that you had to change it, because actually it sort of bubbled up and made things a bit worse. And well, how can I don't know. I mean, my neighbour just had that happen. I don't know. I don't feel safe at all. In which case, you do have to go back to the drawing board and find something which perhaps isn't quite so categorically what you wish for, because magical thinking and magical wishing, yes, in a way, that is in a way what we're doing. Of course, there's nothing magical about it, but we are perhaps putting in something as a statement, as an accepted statement, which actually isn't true. And it wouldn't have been true for you, Pia, not actively, obviously outside there, through, you're still suffering from all of those things. So that's where we are a little bit, we need to sort of point that out, I think. And so some of the phrases we might wish for, I am safe, actually don't, I'm going to say don't work, that's not quite the right way, but they're not in the right framework, maybe. So that's not me knocking what happened for you, Pia, because it happened all right for you. But what do you want to say?
What I have found over the years is that my body knows if it wants that outcome. My mind might not like it, but my body wants it.
Yes, yes.
And then I persevere with it. And there is a tipping point, yes, where the inner critic, because I've worked with parts, the inner critic is not stopping it.
Yeah. Yes. Like, okay.
That's how I find it.
Oh, what a lovely word to use, the inner critic. We've all got that, haven't we? We've all got that part of us which says, hey, are you sure? Yes. And if that's not stopping it, that's a really good clue, isn't it? If we are in tune with our inner critics, which we might not be particularly. However, Bev, that might be a reason for you not having the right formula. We'll come back to that a little bit later. So if I'm treating you now as clients, now I have been a bit of an idiot by not getting my notes out about the personal formula, and I'm just going to get them. Hold on a sec. Right. So we're talking to our clients with, this is a new stage for you to be thinking about. It absolutely isn't compulsory, but we're going to use the autogenic state to just play with a few ideas about how we can personalize our AT. And you've got all the standard exercises now in place. That's what I would be saying to them. Now, in the second paragraph, I don't know, I can't remember what our class notes. It's a mistake to make these formulae sound like New Year resolutions. Is that on there? Yes, we all know what happens to New Year resolutions. And they are usually influenced by other people. Oh, I'm going to be a nicer person. I'm going to be better in my relationship. I'm going to be this and that. And that is a bit about the wishful thinking, I think, Bev, sometimes. So we really do need to have a think about what we actually want. And everybody has got books on affirmations, haven't they? Or stickers on their fridges with affirmations. And really, that's what these are. In fact, what they were originally called was intentional formulae. Well, why did we have to change that? Patricia and Donna, maybe. We couldn't call
because
them.
Because we don't have attention for anything.
Well, that is true. That is true. But I think the German interpretation of intentional in this context was, well, actually this is about something specific that we wish for. Okay. But we have our intentional offloading exercises. So it got far too confusing. So these intentional formulae became personal and motivational formulae, which again is slightly different to affirmations, but actually it's the same idea. Okay. So what we would do was put these into an autogenic exercise every time we practice. So a little added extra for your own self. Now, there is this paragraph here called the neutral state. We spoke about it yesterday, actually, in our training, didn't we? It's one of the stages of an autogenic exercise. So if you suddenly, I'm going to use the term wake up, but you haven't been asleep, but when you suddenly realize during an autogenic exercise, oh, I was doing my AT, of course. Okay. That little chink of a moment is the place to put your personal formula, because you've been in a very deep no thought state. So if this is, by the way, the first time that you're talking to your client about the neutral state, it might be you need to go into a bit more detail. But we here spoke about it yesterday. So that's a good place to put your autogenic formula. I usually say it's like, this is like the fertile soil, and you're now planting the seed, which is your formula, into that space. Now, we don't always find the neutral state. You can't chase it. You can't find it and make it happen. So that won't be every time. Otherwise, you're going to put your formula in at the very end of your exercise. This is on page 3 of the notes, page 2 and 3. So you could put it in after peace. You don't have to write this down, actually. It's all on the notes that you're given in the client notes, I think. After the peace formula, but you might want to end with peace, so you repeat it again. It's up to you. So we can be quite fluid with this. Or you can say, put it in before the peace formula, between neck and shoulders and peace, and then finish with peace. And the neutral state is the other place. Okay. So what is this formula going to be like? And then on page 2, we've got some guidelines, which you're going to run through with your client. And it's quite a good idea to draw attention to the difference between these and our standard exercises. Always make the formula short and simple. And there was a story about someone who wrote half a sheet of A4 paper and learned it off by heart. It was a script, and he recited it to himself every time he did his AT. No, you don't want to have a formula like that. However, this guy apparently reduced his epileptic fits from 8 per month to 1. So even having a great long script actually helped him. Of course, we don't know if it was general autogenics that helped him more than the script. We don't know. You don't have to say all that. Okay, it's in the present tense. And that's quite powerful to say, we haven't been saying, I want my arm to be heavy next Tuesday. We haven't been saying that in our AT, have we? And people often laugh at that idea. Of course we haven't. It's in the present moment. Everything is in the present moment. And number 3, we avoid the negative. And that's an interesting one. Because what I understand, and Pia, you probably know more about this than I do, but in an altered state, the brain, the natural brain, doesn't know what no is. It doesn't know what not, won't, couldn't, shan't. It doesn't understand that. And we know that in our lives, don't we? Because we have to train the children. We have to say, no, don't touch, it'll hurt you, no, and so on. So that's an interesting one. We must make our formula in a positive statement, and it is immediately accepted. Immediately. So that might be something to do with your formula, Bev? We don't know. We don't know yet. We're going to come to you in a bit. There are some negatives, which we'll see later in these sheets, which are acceptable, but they're more like neutralizing ones. So it might be something doesn't matter. And I know somebody who had a phobia about the underground in London, and they had to use it. They lived in London. And it was crowds. And they put in crowds don't matter. Crowds don't matter. And we can feel that, can't we? It's just throwaway. Crowds don't matter. Crowds don't matter. Crowds don't matter. A bit like your anxiety exercise, Pia. Just throw away, just doing it. So this is your one way. Then, so number four, if you've got words like want, ought, should, must, we know that that is ridiculous. An altered state doesn't understand those either. They are all cognitive thought and judgmental words. So we leave those out. I don't know what else you've got on number four. Is it something about how you'll feel when something has come about? No, we haven't got that one. I've got an example on here, which is, suppose you've got trouble with your boss and you decide, I'm going to put something in about that. I no longer fear my boss, you decide to say in your autogenic exercise. I no longer fear my boss. It's slightly negative because you've got no longer, but that would be all right. But what about the other words in there? You've got fear and you've got boss, who you've got an issue with. So that actually isn't a helpful phrase. But if you twisted it round totally differently and made it cool and calm every day, okay, you're probably dealing with your boss a lot better because you're cool and calm every day and you're having proper dialogue with them instead of an anxiety issue dialogue with them. So that's an idea. Any queries? Yes, Bev.
Yeah, I'm just curious about that one because it feels to me like it's important to find the right balance between kind of being too vague but being too specific, isn't it? And that's one where Pia, my inner critic, would come in and tell me, oh, that's way too vague. If I want to have, you know, a better reaction to my boss, yeah, if I'm too vague, my brain's not going to know I'm talking about my boss and maybe it won't work. And so it's scuppering me from the beginning.
Your brain won't know you're talking about your boss, and that's why the phrase has a very good chance of being successful, because your brain doesn't know that.
Yeah.
This ties in with Schultz, who used to say never what's the word? And never address a specific problem directly. And of course we do sometimes. I am safe, absolutely. You know, of course we do. But what he was meaning by that, the brain reacts much better if it's given its own pathway. So we've opened up that pathway, which says cool and calm every day. And if that is happening, that actually isn't vague. It's saying I am cool and calm every day. And so we find the result of that is that suddenly we've got a much better relationship with our boss. And you might not even realize it for 3 or 4 weeks or 3 or 4 months. It doesn't really matter because you're simply using cool and calm every day, or something else of your choosing, of course. So we don't have to get too hooked up in finding exact words. I'm very glad that you've had that little critic in there, Bev, because it's going to be a good example to show us that actually it's not going that right, the right way, is it? Otherwise, you wouldn't be having that going in there. Anyway, but sorry, I keep saying we'll come to it in a minute. These are the things that I always run through, these guidelines for finding a good phrase. And there's one example I give them with number five. Take care to use words which you really mean what you want them to mean. And I had a story about somebody who learned autogenics with somebody else. She asked me if I could help her with her personal formula. I asked her what it was. She said it was, I can release my anger. And there was an inner smile in me because I guessed what was happening. So I asked her what she felt wasn't comfortable or right with it. And she said, well, I don't know. I just keep being angry. I'm more angry. It doesn't make sense. I go, somebody says, good morning in the supermarket. I can't wait to get rid of them and get on with it. I'm just, you know, so it was coming out. And I said, well, you know what? I knew her very well, this person. Okay. I said, I think your phrase is working brilliantly. And she said, what? And I said, yes, you just got the wrong words. I can release my anger. And then she got it and she roared with laughter. and realized that actually there was something completely silly going on here, and that yes. So then I said, okay, what did you really want from this formula? What was the aim of using these words? I want to be free of my anger, she said. I said, well, isn't that odd you didn't use those words in your personal formula? You could have said, I am free of my anger. However, we talked about it some more. I reminded her of the anger offloading exercises. And actually, don't let's take anger into your autogenic state. Don't let's do that. Let's do the anger offloading away from autogenics. Now, how will you feel when you are free of your anger? What will that feel like for you? And if we put ourselves in that person's shoes, I wonder what we might come up with. Probably completely different things.
I am calm and cool.
I am calm and cool. Okay. Free of my anger means calm and cool. Right. So that might be the phrase she goes to use. Okay. Any other thoughts?
I was just thinking, just free. Actually.
Free.
Just
yeah.
free.
Yeah. Free. Yes. That's very interesting, isn't it? I am free. She will be. Her brain, her body, everything knows what she is free of, but it doesn't even matter that. I am free. Lovely. Okay, so we've got calm and cool, and we've got I am free. Have we got any other suggestions for that situation? Doesn't matter if you haven't. Okay. Because, of course, it's not our own situation, is it? It's somebody else's. So that's the other key thing. That's why nothing's coming up. That's all right. Okay, let's come back to Bev then. If you want to tell us, of course, you might not want to tell us your phrase. That if we want to talk about it in theory, tell us what's
going
on.
Yeah, I don't have an active phrase at the moment.
Okay.
And the one thing I did want to share is I wanted to give up sugar, and this is a few years ago. And the phrase that I used was the, I don't know how you refer to it, but sugar is giving me up.
Oh, yes. We've got smoking is giving me up.
And that was incredible in kind of how that worked, how it changed my behaviours. Because first of all, like my kind of one weakness is chocolate. I do love chocolate. And that was given up first. And it was effortless. There was no conscious, oh, right, how am I going to cut this out? It just happened by itself. And what was really interesting is I knew it had worked because I got to a state where inside me, as I was saying the formula, I was almost laughing because it was so obvious it was going to happen.
Yes.
Like it was almost like belief had grown to such a scale
yes.
that it was laughable that I even needed to say the formula.
Yes.
And none of that was consciously efforted at all. It happened organically. So, and that's probably what taught me about the power of the affirmation in the autogenic state. And so that one worked really, really well. Where I kind of, I don't know, I struggle, and maybe it's because I'm trying too hard to find the right formula for other things. But yeah, I'm just, I don't have a specific thing in mind.
Oh, okay.
But yeah. So well, say, for example, I want to lose body fat. That might be a goal. You know, my mind is like, well, how do I do this? Do I be specific so that my brain knows what my end goal, or do I focus, like the example here would be, you know, what do I want to feel? So it could be, you know, I am light. That could be one, you know, and then I think, well, hang on, is that too non-specific? And I thought, I'm going to bring this up in the training and see what you guys in your wisdom have to like share about this.
Well, the phrase I am light.
Yeah.
How does that feel just saying it now, talking about it?
It feels more like that would be a body sensation instead of heaviness. That would be my body feels light.
Mm-hmm.
would not feel specific to kind of the goal of losing body fat or, you know, reducing body fat.
Okay. Pia?
I have used this with me and also with my clients in the somatic work. And I give them a phrase and I say, I am kind to myself. I am kind to myself. And suddenly people cut things out that they are addicted to, or they take exercise up that they hate, but they're kind to themselves. So it's whatever the body needs.
Yes.
And that's all I can, I've had great success with that, with my clients.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, and it is because, you know, I exercise lots. I eat a really healthy, nutritious diet. And I actually gained a lot of weight giving up smoking. That was something that happened. And it's like, you know, I can maintain this homeostasis bit, the actual effort required to lose the added body fat, that it feels like, okay, life is busy. And, you know, I could do with some autogenic health.
We're now going into too much analysis. Pia, what do you want to say here?
I use with my clients, I am lean and healthy.
Okay.
So that means the body fat that is too much is lost.
Perfect.
Anyway.
Yeah, thank you. I'm sorry, Bev, because we're coming up to our time to go for coffee. So it is actually better not to be too, how do I do this? Which bits? Is it my hips? Is it my thing? You know, all of that. We'd leave that alone. And how will we feel? Lean and healthy. Lovely. Free and healthy. I think the word free, which Donna brought up, is a lovely word. It occurs quite a lot in these words. Healthy and free. Healthy and lithe. Healthy and slim, if you want to. But who is saying slim? Maybe a judgment person is saying that. So it is about kindness is lovely. Kind to myself. And it is, that is Schultz's way of going around the problem and not trying to find the way into the problem to solve it. That might be a good place to go and have coffee.
Yep. Black coffee.
You can have black coffee. I'm putting my full fat milk in mine. Okay. Lovely. There's more things which it might be quite useful to, there's a bit of theory about the types of personal formulae. Okay. So neutralizing, we've mentioned, reinforcing, abstinence, paradoxic, supporting formula. That's one of the test questions this afternoon. Could you name two of those? So learn those off and you've got a question there answered. Okay. Been a bit naughty there. Loads of examples on here. I didn't write all these. I like some of them. I don't like others. So you would give those to the plant. This pack is quite useful. And at the top of mine, actually, I've got, you might start with the Jane Bird multi-purpose one size fits all personal formula. And that is cool, calm and confident. And the brain likes alliteration. And it likes a bit of quirkiness and something to make you smile and so on. So everybody laughs at that. And I don't know how many people go home and use these. I have no idea at all. And the physical formulae, we don't want people saying things like my kidneys are warm or anything, we might just be putting the wrong thing physiologically into the body. But there's a few notions there about some first aid for arthritic pain, for example, or when we've sprained an ankle, we'd put a cold compress on it. So we could say my ankle is cool alongside my arms and legs are heavy and warm. Then go to my right ankle is cool. So those sorts of ideas, they're a little bit looser. We don't have to worry too much about the theory or correctness of those. Okay. Have we shed a little more light?
Are we going to have the text? Because I'll move to the table then. We're having the test after.
After coffee. Yes, we are. Okay. That is quite right. So we must go and get our coffee and bring ourselves back to our computers, and we will, yes, set yourselves up. Very important. I've forgotten that was the next thing. Now, how healthy. That's very all right for me, isn't it, to forget there's a test. You've got a little bit, something a little bit different. Okay.